Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who give a crap enough to be here for Sam Freedom Hour number 37, I question your sanity. It's 10:41 on Tuesday evening. This is the 37th show, and I just want to, you know, just say that maybe you have a problem if you're not doing something productive right now. But that's okay, because we are allowed a little bit of rest and relaxation on this planet. It's not all complete and total suffering, as the scriptures might have us believe. Well, the scriptures really don't have us believe that it's all complete and total suffering. I know that in the Jewish tradition, we get like a Sabbath and stuff, and I think Christians are supposed to take Sunday off and stuff, but other than that, it's work and toil, work and toil, work and toil. Okay? Anyways, tonight's, well, let me just play a little something for you here and see if I can understand this Blog Talk Radio stuff.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, great. Well, see, that volume on that sucked, so I get to turn it up now. Let's try it again.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Nah, I still don't like it. Let's double it. Yeah, works great, huh?
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Gotcha. See, and what it really wants to say to me, because I don't know how to use it, is...
You are an idiot!
Okay, well, like I said, welcome to Sam Freedom Hour number 37. Of course, it's not really the 37th Sam Freedom Hour, because the first two were only 15 minutes. Tonight's show is going to be about something relatively stupid, which is about Paris Hilton going to jail. I mean, it's going to be about a number of things, you know. I mean, there's no shortage of news in this country. It's like everybody's going nuts. Paris Hilton's going to jail for 45 days, and there's actually people out there who are, like, crying over that fact. They think that she only deserves, like, maybe to go to jail for, like, 2 weeks. You know, like this totally undisciplined, talentless, spoiled crybaby somehow shouldn't have to endure what the rest of us endure. You know, she shouldn't go to jail for more than 10 days after, I guess, driving under the influence twice and lying about some signing some indocument. I mean, I'll tell you, if any one of us went through that, would be in jail for like 6 months, and especially if you were black, you'd probably end up in jail for like 6 years. If you were black, they'd probably throw on extra charges. And I'm not saying this prejudicially. I'm saying that that's just how the system is, isn't it? Funny like that. If you're a minority, you run a chance of like getting thrown into jail for twice as long as any crime deserves. And if you're like spoiled, rich, and white, you probably end up in jail for like 1/10 of the time that you deserve. But that's how it is in America. I guess certain parts of our culture seem more acceptable than others. I suppose Paris Hilton isn't planning on heading out and shooting up any 7-Elevens anytime soon either. And I guess the media portrays the minority community as ready to do that kind of stuff at the drop of a hat. So, you know, I think that the scales of justice kind of tip in the direction towards... I think they punish people not based on the crimes that they have committed, but based on the crimes that they're likely to commit too. And I think it's a very poignant point, and a lot of people, I think, will just gloss over it. But it's unfortunately, it's true. I think there's some injustice that goes on. It's not a perfect country. But in any case, so, you know, it's one thing that I'm pretty good when I watch TV. I notice things that a lot of people don't notice. But before I tell you what I noticed tonight, I just want to let you know that if you want more of this madness, some of the shows are pretty good, some of them are lame, but if you want to go to blogtalkradio.com, you just add a /Sam Freedom, and you'll be treated to my archives where there are 36 other Sam Freedom Hours. And remember, it's not really 36 other Sam Freedom Hours because the first two are only 15 minutes. Ha 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 ha, okay. For those of you who don't know, that's something I just swear to that I'm going to say every show that I do. So... also, my MySpace websites, which I've all but abandoned, www.myspace.com/Sam Freedom. The level of participation, I kind of wanted to blame it on myself and say that maybe there was something wrong with my blogs, and so the participation levels drop down, but I just realized it's not like that at all. It's like you have to be P.T. Barnum out there. You have to do something like outrageous, stupid, silly, sickening, or just, you know, appeal to people's sick, perverted taste for gossip and humiliation and all that stuff in order to get, like, large swaths of readers. I did it rather easily when I published some of the more interesting, provocative blogs. I hit top 10, I've hit top 20 a number of times, but I started like looking at some of the top 20 blogs that made top 20 on a regular basis, and they were the absolutely most stupidest fucking blogs I've ever seen in my life. I won't mention names because I'm not out here to hurt anybody, I'm not out here to malign anybody. I'll just say that the general readership on MySpace, I mean, and this could be you who I'm talking about too here, so you know, if it is, tough luck, tough titty. The readership on MySpace, they generally don't care about, like, thought-provoking, provocative stuff. They just want stuff that they can, like, piss and moan and argue about. One of the bloggers that I do like, because at least he puts up topics that are, I think, are important to the people of this nation, is DocManJ, and that's obviously for myspace.com/DocManJ. But, you know, for the most part, you just get, like, 95% of the people that go to his blog are not intelligent people. They're just fucking idiots on both sides of the fence, and I would even dare say on the conservative side of the fence. But they do tend to be a lot more intelligent people who are seemingly on the conservative side of things, because the conservatives seem like the Abels of the world, not the Keynes, the people who kind of have been through life a little bit, gotten some experience. They're not really, like, complaining and whining about, you know, what have you done for me lately and where's my big daddy government to protect me and save me and you're so mean to people. It's not like that. They just understand that life is kind of a harsh place and that the strongest survive and they have to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and go to work and pay their bills and monitor how much they spend, and they realize that if they smoke pot, it's going to, like, affect their brain and it just might make their life a little more foggy, which, of course, the left-leaning side of people don't. So it seems like it's not really a matter of left versus right these days, or maybe it wasn't ever that, but it's more like those who have matured versus those who haven't matured. And that doesn't mean those who have matured are always right or always wise in their pronouncements, but I would tend to rather have somebody on the conservative Republican side of the fence leading important endeavors than somebody on the left. I would like to have somebody on the left maybe in a advisory role, you know, somebody who could just sort of like give their impression of things and give feedback and say, hey, look, maybe you're being a little too hard there, Caesar. And then Caesar could say, well, maybe you're right, but I'd still rather have Caesar run the show than some namby-pamby person who's going to hand over, like, the U.S. to the terrorists, which is what the Democratic Republican Party seems to be able to do. And that was clearly evidenced this week when polls showed that 35% of people in the Democratic Party really believe that George Bush knew in advance that 9/11 was going to happen and he did nothing to stop it. Now, that's not a small number. And for levity's sake, let's just say that polls showed that 15% of Republicans believed it too. So it's easier to believe that 35% of Democrats believe that than 15% of Republicans, because Republicans can also include, like, independents or whatever. But, you know, the Democrats tend to include, like, just Nobody lies about being a Democrat, let's put it that way. It's not something that, like, a proud Republican would lie to be, but, you know, I can see for subterfuge reasons or subversion reasons, I could see a Democrat lying about being a Republican just to skew a poll. But that's just my personal opinion. I didn't say it was true. In any case, the polls do show that 35% of Democrats do believe that George Bush was the leader of the free world, the leader of our country, who you may have policy disagreements with. That's fine. That's one thing to believe policy that you disagree with their policy and you think that, geez, that's horrible. It's already been determined that there was no lies regarding the Iraq War. I would think children, people who are adult children even, would call them lies, because what do you do when you basically feel powerless? You lie your own ass off saying that other people are lying. And then they didn't really... The Bush administration was not lying. There was genuine intelligence errors all along the way. And the one thing about the left is that the Democratic left, the liberals, the socialists, and all of them, is they can have facts staring them right in the face, and they'll just ignore them as long as they can. And that's why they're the ultimate liars. Because George Tenet's book was basically admitted the fact that there was just serious gaps in intelligence, and there were some big mistakes made. Intelligence isn't always accurate, and sometimes after you gather all the intelligence, you have to make a calculated risk or a calculated decision that isn't always based on fact. So they really believed that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And the left will just continue to chant like little fist-pumping monkeys, Bush lied, people died. And that, you have to understand, like, that's like that's the ultimate epitome of uselessness, to just chant over and over again, Bush lied, people died. You know what I mean? It's like when your brain isn't matured and it's not functioning, the best thing to do is just chant slogans and, you know, try and be louder than the people that you don't like, and continually blame somebody more successful than you for your problems. I mean, I want to say sadness, but it is true justice that the Democrats are being marginalized, completely marginalized. I mean, they're in their own world. They think that it's really like some kind of that they're gaining some kind of momentum, and in a sense they are, because the media reports on everything. So the media does report their increased activity, but once again, the beauty of this nation is that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and people are allowed to express their opinions and views no matter how sick and twisted they are, unless it's outright hate speech. But people do get to express their viewpoints, and people, you know, there's a lot of people who don't get reported on in the media. They're like in the middle somewhere, and they could easily vote Democrat or they could easily vote Republican. They try and just vote based on the issues and based on what seems more intelligent, and they don't really talk about those people too much, but they're there, and they're huge. They cover both sides of the fence. They exist in the world of the Democrats and in the world of the Republicans and everywhere in between. And when they hear the Democrats more and more talking, the crazy liberal Democrats talking the way they have been these past, like, 4 to 6 years, make no doubt about it, folks. The Democrats are just going to continue to sink into the abyss as time goes on. I mean, they'll score their small victories, but it's like the Palestinians, you know. They score like a roadside bomb, or one of their 800 rockets that they're firing into Israel like accidentally hits something important, and, you know, they jump up and down chanting victory. Meanwhile, they're in squalor and poverty, and all that fist-pumping and victory chanting makes them completely undesirable and unlikely, you know, work fellows or bedfellows or diplomatic friends with anybody else in the world. You know, as much as like France or other countries might, you know, feel something for the Palestinians, they also sort of know that they're their own worst enemies. And it's the same way with the Democratic Party. You might feel something for them because there's good people in the party, there's no doubt about it. And even some of the misguided people, they're not bad people, they're just misguided. You know, they're young, they're inexperienced, they're impressionable. These are people that believe in the Celestine prophecies, you know, and travel halfway around the world to go like sit in a cave and chant over some scrolls. That's what you get when you're dealing with the Democratic left. You don't see Republicans like running around the world because of some movie called The Secret, you know, or claiming that the Illuminati is real. They're the Cains of the world. They're the runt of the litter. They're the most like susceptible to suggestion as far as crazy things in the world. I mean, case in point, if there was one shred of credible evidence, and I mean one shred of credible evidence about George Bush, about George Bush knowing anything about 9/11 before it happened, there'd be no shortage of reporters who would want to break that news. Even with the way reporting has been sloppy these years, there are reporters that leak information, just allegations. They say, hey, you know, we don't really know if George Bush did this, but something really suspicious was going on here. We want to share it with you, and then maybe, you know, we can go on from there. They would be glad to break any kind of information that suggested that, but not one of them will touch it, not one of them. And the sad thing is while Republicans and conservatives are saying, like, you know, places like the New York Times are extremely liberal and left-leaning, and they really have been. I mean, most people in their right minds will realize in a heartbeat that the New York Times is definitely a left-leaning newspaper, and they are extremely sympathetic to the liberal establishment. But the really sick liberals, the really sick liberal Democrats, they'll just say, like, oh, well, you know, the New York Times has done a horrible job of reporting this, and they're biased against us. It's like, it doesn't matter what you put in front of them as a fact to disprove their position. It always comes back to someone's lying. They're lying. Everyone's lying. And I love it. Like, when Michael Moore came out with Fahrenheit 9/11, Let me just tell you this. I was suggestible. I saw it in the movie theater, and it was so persuasive that I really felt like I wanted to change my vote to Democrat. However, knowing what I know about the power of images and the power of media, I didn't immediately jump on it, and I didn't like let myself get dragged down that river. I watched the movie, and then I went home and I started researching everything, and I waited for the opposition response. And here's the cool thing is that the opposition came out with a response. Now, listen closely for those of you who are either liberal Democrats who really do try to be, who really do think, at least give yourself credit for trying to be fair and balanced, and for people who are sitting on the fence that are easily suggestible and don't know what to think, there is a video, there is a documentary called Fahrenheit, that's H-Y-P-E, Fahrenheit 9/11. And it's the deconstruction of Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. And it really shows, like, factually, like, they take it apart. They show you where. They cite their sources. They give you all the facts that your mind needs to work with in order to determine the truth for itself, where Michael Moore put things out of context. He spliced things in where they originally weren't. He set up people so that people who didn't even understand what they thought that they were answering one question when he then put their answer in with another question, like military veterans, and they feel totally deceived by Michael Moore, and Michael Moore lied about so many things. I mean, there's a way of lying that isn't outright lying. If I tell you that the sun is purple and you look up and the sun appears to be yellow to you, it's quite easy. You can just tell me that I'm lying, okay? I mean, and you know what? Most, once again, sane, rational people is what we're talking about here. The difference in this world is sane, rational people. They'll probably agree with the person who says the sun is yellow because it's fairly simple. Even though the eyes can be deceived, generally speaking, the sun has been yellow for like thousands upon thousands of years, and people realize that. So the guy who says the sun is purple is out of his mind. But when it comes to media, you don't have that good fortune immediately when you're watching something. And a picture is worth a thousand words. So, like, for instance, if you see, if you go to YouTube and you type in Pallywood, P-A-L-L-Y-W-O-O-D, you'll see how the Palestinians, along with the help of French TV, have doctored documentary footage to make it look like, for instance, the Israelis were shooting some, you know, unarmed Palestinian father and child, when in fact it turns out that Pallywood is like this big staged exercise that is where all these Palestinians get together near the border patrol areas for the Israelis, and they stage these big events with, like, ambulances pulling up at the right time and fake carrying people away. They show them carrying people away as if they've been shot and they're all running towards an ambulance or something, and then they show the same person who supposedly was shot, like, in the background now walking once the cameras are away. There'll be, like, another camera that sort of catches them in the background, and they show that it's all really a big stage setup. And so when you watch these films and you see things put out of context, like especially if you watch Bowling for Columbine by Michael Moore, you end up wanting to hate Charlton Heston. But you know what? Exercise your fucking mind, people. You know what I mean? Get serious. I'm not necessarily talking about you in particular, whoever you might be. But maybe you are one of those people. Or maybe they are listening. But go to fucking Google and type some stuff in and research. Get the other side. Get the other point of view. Don't just believe everything you hear like a bitch. Because that's what most of the liberal Democrats are. They're bitches. And when I say that in the most fondest of terms, because, you know, bitches are okay when they know their place. It's just that most of them don't, you know. So they go out in the street and they bitch, and they think that they're exercising their free speech. But, gosh forbid, you know, a conservative Republican express their free speech, then they try and ostracize them or get them kicked out of whatever it is they do. They storm the podium. You know what I mean? It's just, I used to be bothered by that stuff because I thought that, you know, like Rodney King, who the liberal Democrats seem to love, when he says, "Can't we all just get along?" You know, their leaders are like the people they look to for inspiration, are like criminals who have like rap sheets the size of fucking Godzilla. So Rodney King comes out, he's like, "Can't we all just get along?" I really thought growing up that we should all just get along, but the liberal Democrats are just an insidious bunch of bastards who do not have the brain capacity to be a real part of the political process, so that their whole contribution to it is to subvert. They're just subversives. They subvert the political process. And the old school Democrats, who were some great people like Scoop Jackson, Zell Miller, I'm trying to think of a few others, really escaping me. But anyways, the good old school Democrats, they just don't seem to exist anymore. They were really for the people. They weren't just a bunch of kids who were like hopped up on the fact that they finally got some camera, you know, TV time. These are even guys like, you know, if you watch Fox News, he comes on with Bob Beckel. He's actually, you know, I mean, he's a good guy. He's not, I may disagree with his views, but he's not a nasty person. And that's what you get on the liberal left. You get nasty people. Nasty, nasty people who are just expressing themselves in the most subversive and nasty ways. I remember there was a blogger by the name of, well, I don't want to dignify her with mentioning her name on my show here, and I'm sure, like, you know, if word gets out that she'll hear about this and she'll feel important, you know, like she'll have to come respond to me or write about a blog about me, and I don't really want to give her the dignity of mentioning my name in any of her blogs, but let's just say that one day I made my opinion clear on her blog having to do with illegal immigration. You know, these are people that, these liberal Democrats just are people that believe that the border should just be erased, and, you know, and that everyone's going to behave. The Mexicans, you know, we took the land from them supposedly, and now they deserve it back. You know, let's just give it all back. You know, we developed it. Let's just give it all back. And no Mexican ever did anything wrong or bad. You know, there was never any raids by Mexicans into American territory. But it shouldn't matter anyways, because Americans were just Europeans who were running here for freedom, and we beat up the Indians. But no, there were never any bad Indians. No Indians ever raided white establishments and, you know, stole their women and killed their children. That never happened. So, you know, survival of the fittest, the American people just took over. And now we have America. It's survival of the fittest. I mean, if you want to genuinely, I'm going to track back in a second, if you want to genuinely say that this is a reconquista, if you want to genuinely say, hey, look, you came here as Europeans, you came here and you stole the land from the American Indian, and you stole the land from, like, the Mexicans who had Texas and, you know, parts of California, and now they're stealing it back, well, okay, the original thing, you can call it an act of war, and now if you want to say this is an act of war, fine. Then let's call it a war and let's get this thing done with, okay? I mean, that's just if you want to talk apples to apples. If you're saying it's okay, if a liberal Democrat is telling you that the, remember this closely because they do this, if the liberal Democrat is telling you that the invasion coming over the southern border is okay because we, meaning Americans, took the land from them years ago, well then just tell them, okay, then what you're describing is an act of war in response to our act of war. So if it's a war, let's get the army down there and settle this thing. I think we'll know who'll win that. But if you want to say that it's really just a bunch of poor Mexicans who are coming up here for opportunities, you got to let some of that fall back on the shoulders of the Mexican government. Not only that, supposedly these migrant workers are just coming here to earn some money, you know, and just send it back home. Bullshit. There's like whole villages now in Mexico. Whole villages, not just 10 little huts or 15 huts, but whole cities where the men have come up to America, have invaded, come over the border illegally, and under the pretense of, you know, sending money back home or getting some money to send to their wives or maybe sending for them later on, and they've disappeared. And in fact, it's like a shameful thing if you don't come to America. Like, because if like 90% of the men have left your village and gone up to America instead of getting all free health care and free educational services and free licenses and free credit cards from Bank of America, and you're just like sitting back in your little Mexican village, you're a man in your Mexican village, what kind of a man are you? Well, I'll tell you this, it's probably one fucking happy man, because a lot of those guys that left, they didn't come back for their women. And now the wives are all like, they're forming a website looking for their husbands. Oh, you lovely leftists, isn't that nice? I mean, why don't you get on those Mexican men now for abandoning their families? But wait, let's blame it on American culture. We just made things too good for them, didn't we? We're not giving them a fair shake. If we gave them a fair shake, they could bring their families up too. Why don't we just like let every Mexican just come up here? That's it, no immigration laws. Just it's our fault. Why don't we just like make it so that the Mexican men can come up here and work a little bit, and that we should allow them to also bring their wives and their kids and everything too. That way they wouldn't abandon their wives. I mean, it's all George Bush's fault, forcing those Mexican men to have to be in hiding and abandon their wives like that. Well, so those on the right, those are the conservative Republican types and the independents even, they know what's going on. They know that George Bush isn't responsible for droves of Mexican men jumping over the border and abandoning their families who are now have gone high tech in building websites in order to tell their husbands to come back home. Well, I got news for you. They're not coming back home. It's too cushy in America, and once you get a taste of what goes on up here, you're not going to go back. It's very difficult. It's like, I don't want to create some really nasty analogies, but I do want to drive the point home. Let me just say that if a man who's living in a village in Mexico, a squalid village in Mexico, crosses over the border to California and starts getting some really hot Mexican-American pussy and has a kid up here, he's not going home. And he's probably going to stop sending money home, too. And guess what? He's sending that money home illegally, but that's okay. Liberal Democrats don't mind that because George Bush is somehow at fault, and we conquered the Mexicans. And I mean, I know the people who have a liberal Democratic leaning are not getting this, but once again, that's the beauty of this country, is that allowing them to express themselves as the fanatics that they are who don't know how to apply their critical thinking process, those of us who are more reasonable start to really see what's going on. And they can think whatever they want. But the thing is that when you have something like a revolutionary-type movement, it's very romantic and seductive. You know, you get a lot of people that will jump on board really fast. So it looks like it's gaining some momentum, you know, and they're just kind of going gangbusters. And every week the news is looking for new stories, so they get more attention. But the majority of Americans who are realizing that there's just incredible insanity, they're starting to get moving. They're starting to realize that their way of life and their comfort levels are going to be seriously affected. And the majority of Americans are going to end up being like a juggernaut. Slow to get moving, but once it's moving, look out. And I guarantee you that the left-leaning people will be crushed like fleas. And I don't mean personally, like no one's going to be thrown in a pit of fire, nobody's going to be locked up in a building somewhere or tossed, you know, out at sea. I just mean like they're going to be marginalized. They're going to be voted out of office. I don't think Hillary or Barack has a shot in hell, especially with Mitt Romney and Giuliani, and maybe a couple of others up there on the Republican side. But I think people are starting to also see, you know, Nancy Pelosi didn't come through in any of the first 100 days promises. They can't all agree amongst themselves. They're using doublespeak. They're saying they're not going to defund the troops, but at the same time they're trying to put time restrictions on any of the bills that fund the troops. It's just total, utter chaos and madness. I truly wish we didn't have to go through it, but I suppose there are people who might have wished we didn't have to go through the American Revolution, and if we didn't, probably wouldn't be here right now. And so there are probably people who didn't want to get up off their duffs and create Blog Talk Radio, and if they didn't, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. So I suppose these things have to happen, and as rational adults, we have to learn how to suffer through them intelligently. But those charming liberal Democrats sure make it difficult. But that's their job. Once again, they if they can upset anyway. In argument schools and schools of argument and argumentative circles where people discuss and debate things, they're called shit disturbers. They don't really come with ideas. They come with shit, and they throw shit, and they throw rotten tomatoes, and they just stink up the room. They try and push as far as they can until they get spanked, and then they cry and moan about being spanked, and they want to get compensated for being abused and all that stuff. It's just a fiasco, and hopefully we can continue to marginalize them. But once again, when I went to that woman's blog and I told her that the Mexican invasion was really, it was eventually going to be stopped, it needed to be stopped, her basic response to me was that that I was really scared because the day of the white man being generally like the majority or in power was coming to an end. And it was coming from a white girl, and it wasn't even a racist issue. Like, I don't look at a Mexican and think anything bad. I don't look at a black person and think anything bad. I don't look at non-white people and think anything bad. I look at people, and I base people on two things. One, the merits of their culture, and two, their individual merits. So, for instance, Asian people, when my family had a business, Asian people were like the absolute most responsible payers. You never, ever, ever had to chase Asian people to pay their bills. It's like an honor thing with them. Like, you just never had to chase them. But there were other groups where you always had to chase them. Now, call me prejudiced, but that's going by experience, okay? So if my experience, if you don't use experience as a determining factor in how to then continue to conduct your business, then what have you. And that's what the liberal Democrats are always trying to do. They're trying to rewrite history, re-envision history. Hillary Clinton, who's going to be the who is a presidential candidate and who is going to be probably one of the final people in her in the Democratic Party running for the presidency, basically says anytime someone brings up something like Whitewater or Travelgate or just something, you know, in her past, she says, well, I think the American people are ready to turn the page on that. And I want to look forward. This is a woman who wants to be president of the United States, and she wants to just erase everything that happened from, like, that day backwards, okay? No scrutiny, no scrutiny. So, and that's what goes on the liberal Democrat side of things. So, you can't, for instance, when we were running that business, and all our Asian customers are paying, we never have to chase them, and all of another particular persuasion, you always had to chase them, it would be fiscal suicide to ignore that, okay? And that's why the statement, if you ignore history, you are doomed to repeat it, is so profound and true. For those of you who would like to call in, it's 646-652-4573. And I generally do not even advertise my radio shows anymore. It's not that I don't want listeners, but it's that, generally speaking, the this is more like a hobby for me. I enjoy doing it, and I can get off a pretty good rant or a pretty good, you know, speech fairly well on my own, just sitting here as I'm doing now. When I get people on, it can be fun. It generally turns into like a free-for-all towards the end, and you know, everyone has a right to their opinion, and they do have fun, but it's not. It doesn't get too scholarly or too academic, and then generally it breaks down into like sex talk or some of the standard fun, goofy stuff that we've done in the past. I mean, if you go back and you listen to some of the Blog Talk radio shows that we've had, some of the Sam Freedom Hours that we did in the past, you'll see there's just some crazy fun stuff. We've had Todd Andrew Barnett on, who's a libertarian who has a show, and Todd's just a very Todd's got a good side to him, but on the shows he's been rather kind of comical. And like you ask him a question, and he'll be like, okay, all right. And he'll take like 20 minutes to make a point that takes like 30 seconds. And we've had some fun at his expense on here. We've picked on Fat Kid, but not in a bad way. Fat Kid's just graciously, you know, taken it. And it's been kind of good for shtick, like Jerry Lewis takes crap from Dean Martin once in a while. Well, Fat Kid 6 Delta has taken some crap from like the Vietnamese farmer who makes beats. You're not subscribed to my blog, Fat Kid. I kick your ass because I'm a marketer, dude. That's the kind of stuff that we did. So I don't really advertise my shows anymore. I just kind of launch into like a big old tirade about whatever happens to be in the news that day, and I hope that maybe some of you listen to it and pick something up. I think right now one of my favorite radio show hosts, which, you know, immediately cuts across lines, like it pisses some people off immediately and others love it, is Michael Savage. You know, I'm not saying Michael Savage is right all the time, although I do agree with him a lot, but he says what he means. And you don't get that from the liberal Democrat left. They're like snakes, you know. They say one thing, and then they say another thing, and then they run to the ACLU and try and claim, you know, they've been abused, and then they, you know, it's a show. I mean, it's almost like there's no words for it. Well, if I could find words for it, it'd probably be like three words, like liars who lie about lying, you know, whatever it is. And that's pretty much it. If you pick up at least one thing from this show and you kind of go off and do some research, like I gave you the information about Fahrenheit 9/11 by Michael Moore, and then the answer to that, which dissected it and showed what a big lying sack of shit Michael Moore was in Fahrenheit 9/11. If you take that one piece of information and go to the web and type in Fahrenheit 9/11, boy, you might learn something, and you might be quite startled. If you learn that what's going on in the Pacific Rim, if you type in PACOM, P-A-C-O-M, into Google, you might find something fascinating about what's going on with America and a lot of the Asian states in response to China's rise in military presence. This is your world, people, you know? You got to know these things. If you want to call into the show, it's 646-652-4573. If you do call, I'm going to Oh, this is interesting. I don't know why, but my show is not letting me play my sounds back anymore. And let me just see if it does it one more time. I'm going to see if I can play my sounds. Yay, I can play my sounds. So if you call into the show, I'll probably just tell you...
Shut your damn cake hole!
That was Chris Farley, of course. Chris Farley. Chris Farley. Isn't it great? We all love Chris Farley, but and he was such an icon in American comedy. And yet he was like this big, fat slug who did heroin and bought hookers and, you know, probably used comedy as like a way to distance people from his miserable inner self. And, you know, people like you heard last show I had with that fake bitch, Myrtle, who was telling me, oh, hi, Myrtle, who was telling me, like, not to make fun of Chris Farley. Well, Chris Farley was everything bad about America. I mean, he was a funny guy, but it was a smokescreen because he was such a mess inside. The guy just did drugs. Now, you know what? We can have sympathy for the guy. We can say that it would have been nice if he got some help and lived and became a, you know, constructive human being, but that's how it is. He was a drug abuser. And yet people think he was the funniest thing in the world. You got to wonder, if he wasn't doing the drugs and he wasn't living that kind of lifestyle, would he have been as funny? Who knows? Who knows?
Were you born an asshole? Or did you work at it your whole life? Either way, it worked out fine. Because you're an asshole tonight.
Yes, I can even make fun of myself sometimes. I'm being an asshole. I apologize. I'm being an asshole. I made fun of Chris Farley. That is definitely a bad thing to do because to liberal Democrats, stupid comedy is a religion. That's right. I used to love Monty Python too, folks. Don't get me wrong, but I understood it to be nonsense. Whereas most of you on the left-leaning liberal Democrats find it religious. You find it spiritual. And, you get like a kind of religious fervor over it, you know, and you run around. I think Melanie's been on the show before, saying how her and her friends used to go to Denny's at late night and repeat little Monty Python quotes back and forth to each other, which is, you know, just so cute. It's cute when you're a kid, but when you're like in your 30s and you're still dressing up like Monty Python or going to Rocky Horror Picture Shows, you got probably a little growing up to do. So, I mean, you know, I'm not telling you that you have to grow up. It's America, right? But, I tend to, like, stop doing that. I tend to, like, think of quotes more from Robert Kiyosaki or Napoleon Hill, people who were constructive, productive, understood the benefits of a positive mental attitude. And who else? I think those are my two favorite people, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to shift gears now. There's about 15 minutes left of the show, and I'm going to switch gears to those of you who are now, I mean, I've already got it off my chest that there's a really nasty, nasty element in this world right now, in our USA, that is just making things very difficult for those who would like to protect our freedoms. And now that I've got that out of the way, I will talk about something constructive, something that you can put to use, or at least use to help you understand your life better. And it is, once again, it's Robert Kiyosaki. It's stuff from him. And it was something that I never used to really care about it, but one day I was surfing the Robert Kiyosaki website, and he was talking about a game that he had called Cashflow 101. And he maintained that learning was much easier when it was fun and you learned through playing games. And I thought that was too simplistic at the time. And I thought he was just trying to, you know, sell another game, and the fact that it was like $129 or something kind of made me think, you know, who the frig does this guy think he is? He's just making money by selling the game. And that's what we need to do. Of course, you know, I was, that's called being too smart for your own good, okay? So, I actually had a friend who picked the game up, and he invited me to come play. And I thought, okay, I'll go give it a shot and I'll play. So we, the prescription is to play it six times. And after six times around that, you'll definitely learn something astounding. And I just had to see it myself, you know. If someone makes a huge claim and it's not like a guru or like a messiah type person who's saying, like, you know, step off the cliff and you will understand, then generally I like to go do it if it's not that kind of stuff. But if somebody says, look, after playing this game six times, you will have a stunning revelation, I'll play the game six times because I want to see what it is. I really want to understand it. And it's not life-threatening. And it's educational. The guy's a proven track record. So I played it, and it was about the fourth time playing it that I had, like, that light bulb go off over my head. I mean, profound. I had, like, the clouds in my mind opened up. And I saw that a person who's, like, a janitor or a school teacher actually has a better shot at financial freedom than a doctor or a lawyer. I mean, think about that. In our society, we have it reversed because we don't think in terms of financial freedom. We think in terms of, you know, earning a wage. And there's only one of you. There's only one of you. So you can only be in so many places at a given time, one place at a given time, and you can only be paid for the hours that you work. So if you're just working at Wendy's or McDonald's or even in, like, you know, an insurance office or whatever, you're just getting paid for the hours you work. And then, like a good little doggy, you know, you might do some extra stuff for rewards. You might do some overtime. You might, you know, take on an extra project, and you get a pat in the head and a little bonus, and next year they'll give you a 3.5% raise. And, I mean, you know, maybe they'll treat you well, and maybe you'll have to fight for it. You know, maybe you have to go in and say, hey, look, I think I deserve a 5% raise. Okay, and the truth is you might have talents and skills inside you that really deserve a 10% raise. You might have a fount of wisdom in you where you could actually give yourself a 2,000% raise if you just left the company. But no one taught you this. You were taught to be a good consumer. You were taught to be a good little socialite, a good little consumer. And I guess statistics are showing now that, like, a massive, massive amount of people in America are entrepreneurs. Somebody told me the number, and I flipped out. I forget. It was, like, huge. It was, like, 68%. I mean, I think that's all bullshit. But it might have been, like, 68% of people 18 to 26 or something like that. I still think that's bullshit. All I know is they just gave me a large number, and I didn't believe it. It was like anything. I realized that these polls and censuses are flawed, but I still think it was indicative of a rising trend in people who are giving up the wage-earning lifestyle and moving into some kind of a home-based business. I mean, with the advent of the Internet, and with the kind of freedom and access that we have in the United States, not only has the United States corporately, you know, traded throughout the world and done very well, but we can now individually trade throughout the world as our own little corporations with getting consumers and people who are just getting onto the Internet now in other countries and, you know, getting to them first. That's just the part of the benefits of being in a superpower nation and having the advantages that we have. Even the people who are on some of the lowest rungs in the economic ladder in this country have that opportunity if they just shed their victim mindset. So one of the things that Robert Kiyosaki taught me in that game was that, and this is really poignant, I'm not kidding, you should get your pencils out and write this down, but at least commit it to memory. When your passive income, and for those of you who don't know, passive income is income that you're making, for instance, right now. Just you're listening on the phone, you're not really doing any work for anybody, but you have an investment somewhere in the bank, you've got stocks, you've got an online business, you've got something that's just in the background, it's earning money for you while you sleep, around the clock, okay? That's passive income. It comes in every month, and you don't have to work for it again. You may have to do some maintenance for it, like, you know, if for instance, you have somebody on an account and their account earns you money every month, you may have to call them up once every 3 months and say, hey, how's it going? Can I help you? Many times you don't have to, but at least you get the idea. It's not something you're working for day in and day out, fighting traffic to get to that desk job and all that stuff. So when your passive income is equal to or greater than your monthly expenses, you are free. Now, once again, to speak of freedom from inside the prison is a lot different than being free. If you get a taste of freedom it may be a little bit scary, because there you are with all this potential, and you don't even necessarily know how to use it, but at least you have the freedom to find out. But when you're struggling to make money each month to pay your bills because you do not have passive income coming in, and you know that you're not your own person, that you have bills that come every month, and your time, therefore, is already taken. It's already owned. Somebody already owns you for the rest of the next month, for the rest of the next year, until you become financially free. Somebody owns your time. You're going to work for somebody, okay? Even if it's Uncle Sam, even if the Uncle Sam's giving you a handout, you still have to perform certain requirements. So you still have to be a certain level of sick or a level of debilitated or whatever, but that's not financially free. You've taken a hit. If you're sick, you're not free. You're limited by the effects of your disability. But you can still achieve financial freedom from that state, which is a whole different thing. Now, if I haven't totally confused you, yeah, actually, there really is nothing confusing about this. You need to get passive income to be equal to or greater than your monthly expenses. When you're financially free, you then can consider all your options, because your mind is not, even the subconscious, the back of your mind is not tied down to thinking, what do I do this next coming month to make my money? What do I do to break free? What do I do to get rich? And the ideas that people have about getting rich are things like making $1 million. Like, oh, if I just had $1 million, I'd be so happy. Wrong. In your non-financial freedom mindset, with all of your old habits and outlets that you do for peace of mind, like, who knows, maybe you go play darts at the end of the week, you go out with your friends and get drunk as a skunk. And those are your habits to deal with the pressures of living the slave-type lifestyle that you now live. If you had $1 million, you'd just go do those things a lot faster and a lot more expensively. And you probably think you wouldn't, but that's what everybody thinks. You know, they think, oh, no, I would use that money to... Well, you know, maybe you would be honest. Maybe you would use that $1 million and get yourself to financial freedom, but most people don't. I've seen people hit lottery tickets for $25,000, and for the next, like, 6 months... The front yard is littered with all kinds of bikes and boats and swimming pools and stuff, and they're back to being poor people again. But at least now they get a lot more stories. And they have a lot of junk, which, you know, they can milk down the road, you know, because the bikes, they might get old, but then they can sell the bike, you know, whatever. It's just they live in that non-financial freedom mindset. You, on the other hand, have the possibility of breaking free. You're not going to do it by being a wage earner, okay, that's for sure. But, the Robert Kiyosaki model gave people two ways that they could work on becoming financially free. Increase your passive income and decrease your monthly expenses. But if I told you to do a list right now and find out exactly, precisely, no bullshit, no, oh yeah, but this, just precisely, what are your monthly expenses, I would bet that maybe 1 out of 20 of you would even bother to go do it. But just to have that number is powerful. If you do nothing else but get that number, you will just open up, the next step will appear to you. So I'm not kidding. Go get a pencil, find out what your monthly expenses are. And then you have, the reason it's important is because then it takes your existence out of the realm, more out of the realm of your imagination, and puts it more squarely into reality. See, if you don't know what your monthly expenses are, then you really just have less information with which to become free. You're that much further away from it. I mean, you might be miles and miles away, but you're going to be like, you might be 2 miles away from financial freedom, but if you don't have that number, you're going to be 2.2 miles away. So at least if you get that number, you're going to be making some progress. Then if you can find a way to make passive income, well, that's what I do online, is I make passive income. But let's just say your monthly expenses are like $4,000 a month. Well, if you have $2,000, if you have even $200 of passive income coming in somewhere, that's still $200 more of freedom that your mind has, that it knows it doesn't have to earn that next month. It's still quite a ways from feeling completely free, but the more passive income that you generate, the more free your mind begins to feel. And once you get to that 50% mark, you have such a taste for financial freedom that you're unstoppable. But that's something that you need to consider. The ways of financial freedom, well, and also break it down, $4,000 a month, okay, if you broke that down by day, as a work-at-home marketer, for instance, let's say 30 days in a month. So that would be 3 goes into 400, $133 a day. Comes out to about $4,000 a month. So $133 a day means I have to make one or two or any number of sales online that equal $133. And actually, if you learn, I know your mind is probably very far from understanding anything about working online, but there's affiliate malls out there which allow you to just recommend products to, like, other people. It's one of the easiest things you can actually do online, and I know you may not know a thing about it now, but I'm just telling you that it's very easy to make $25, $30, $40, $50 a product to people. And just if you can just sell two of those a day, you know, think about it. If you can just do two of those a day, you have 24 hours to do it, and you can do it in your underwear. You can go outside and have as many cigarettes as you want. You can take a fridge break. You can go for a drive. You can talk on the phone. As long as you learn the secrets of online marketing and you can put some kind of a traffic generation system on autopilot and have at least two or three people that come through your websites buy something, you're on your way to financial freedom. Then if you pick up a book like The World's Greatest Secret, I think that's it, The World's Greatest Secret, or The Greatest Salesman in the World, my apologies, The Greatest Salesman in the World. If you read that book, you'll understand how investing makes money. If you pick up books by Robert Kiyosaki, you'll understand how to invest your money. Robert Kiyosaki said that wage earners are on the lowest part of the quadrant, okay, which is the cash flow quadrant, he called it. As a wage earner, if you know, you're basically at the mercy of everybody above you. As a self-employed person, you might make a lot of money doing what you do, but if you break your leg or you have to be out of work for a couple of weeks for a medical emergency, you're not making money. You know, you don't make money for those weeks, and your bills still come in. If you are a business owner, you may have other people doing the work for you. Hold on just 1 second. Switching phones, folks. I'm back. If you are a business owner, you'll have about 20 to 50 people working for you. And you might be able to get away for 2 weeks at a shop, but you're still tied to your business. And if and things can still happen. But if you're an investor and you learn how to invest your money properly, or you learn how to create web businesses, invest your time into web real estate, you can have stuff going on autopilot in the background and become financially free. And you can work on bringing your bills down. You don't have to be like ridiculously rich. If your monthly, for instance, your monthly expenses are $4,000, well, you can find a way to cut it down to $3,400, you know, cut back a little bit, and at least get into the realm of financial freedom, find out what it's like. Because when you get to that point, it's not about how much you make. It's about passive income equaling monthly expenses. When you get to that point where you do not have to wake up every morning and go to work for someone else, something in you just changes. It's like, at first it doesn't feel right. I'll be honest with you. At first you feel guilty, or I felt guilty. You feel like all these people around you are busting their humps. They're doing the commute. They're putting up with the bosses. And I really felt like I was leaving them behind. You know, I was abandoning them. And, I mean, you know, it's not true. That can be like the final impediment to financial freedom, is this sense of feeling that you need to, like, stay in that craziness with people, or else you're leaving them behind. You're being uncompassionate. But actually being financially free allows you a greater capacity to be more compassionate towards people, to be able to develop and create endeavors whereby you can offer more opportunities to such other people to become financially free on their own. I know there's a little critical, analytical judge in the back of one's mind that says, well, the whole world can't become financially free. Well, I'll tell you what. Leave that up to the forces that be and just do your work. Leave that up to, like, whatever's running the show upstairs. And you just continue to work at becoming more financially free, building up your portfolio and offering opportunities to other people. And you let nature and the bean counter upstairs determine just how many people can become financially free. Let the one in charge decide that. And let me see, folks. That pretty much, I think, is going to wrap it up for tonight. Wanted to first cover current events. Yeah, my show is pretty much over. I wanted to cover current events, get a little talking about Paris Hilton tonight, then talk about the liberal democratic scourge that is subverting the people who are working hard to keep this country safe and prosperous, and to then give you some positive information as far as how you may better your life if you so wish. So that's a threefer, folks. You got a little gossip tonight about cranky Paris Hilton, who is getting what she deserves, probably less than what she deserves. And you got a little insight into the crazy liberal mindset. And you got a little path to freedom. All in the Sam Freedom Hour, number 37, which is not the real 37th hour because the first two were only 15 minutes. And on that note, folks, I would like to say good night.